The founders forgot that we had medical liberty.
We seem to be losing by taking the side of the middle. And we seem to constantly be losing.
I think Trump has made some kind of arrangements with Russia.
This person has made the allegations that they were a man.
If there's content that's borderline, that's content that we basically will not.
There is no second best. There's no second best crypto asset.
Let's talk about science.
I respect you and I have a great deal of appreciation to you, JF, because in a time when everybody was attacking me, when Sargon doxed me and smeared me, you were the only one who gave me a platform, and you were very kind in helping me put the truth out there.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. How are you doing, people? On the regular chat, I'm super physically exhausted, so I can't do a super show tonight. Whatever you guys want to ask me, go ahead. We can talk a little bit about Iran. And there was a good interview I've given to Yann Rushdie this afternoon, and it's available if you want to hear me in French talk about the revolutionary phenotype. Yann did a good effort to understand the whole book and piece by piece and the reasoning. So that is available. It's on my social media if you're looking for the link. End of the line, Joel says, is the province of Alberta seeing the same quantity of immigration from India, Pakistan, and China as Ontario and Quebec continue to experience? I don't know if the everyday recent immigration is as strong. I would suspect it is. Definitely, Alberta is not spared from the immigration problem of Canada. But it concentrates a lot around Calgary. So you have, and it's a lot of Indian immigration. So you have the option of living outside of downtown and the big areas of, you know, residential buildings around Calgary, and then you're fine. Personally, if I go out, I don't see an Indian before I drive, let's say 15 minutes, and the Indian will be the Tim Hortons person, of course. And then if I want to see Indians just walking on the street, I have to drive 2-3 hours. So Alberta is a very divided place where Calgary is becoming its own entity, just like the big cities of other provinces. But the difference in Alberta is that political power has been preserved by white conservatives. That is the important distinction. So through the configuration of counties and the very, very high concentration of immigrants in single cities, there is a strong, stable power for conservatives in Alberta. That is the only advantage left, and therefore the only place left to run for anyone in Canada, which is what I had to do. Because of the political persecution in the other provinces of my family. But one day Alberta will fall also, because when you look at Calgary, it's an unresolvable problem. Absolutely unresolvable. And it's not something that you can even control, because it's a federal controlled issue. So you get immigrants. And anyways, at this point, the immigrants are Canadian citizens, so what are you going to do? You're not going to be able to deny them entry in a province. Rodita Lissid says, I don't think so, Joel. He was saying, I don't think so about the immigration. Something like 87% of the immigration in Canada goes to one of the three cities, Vancouver, Toronto, and Montreal, with so few immigrants going to the rest of Canada. Well, that is true. But Calgary, I don't know by which mechanism, but they get to Calgary. However that works, they get to Calgary, because let me tell you, if you look at the demographics of Calgary, go Google it, and it's actually worse. Like, Calgary is worse than Montreal. Now, you wouldn't believe this because, well, first, it's a complex situation. The demographics of the Quebecois people, the white Quebecois, are kind of stable. They are reproducing quick enough. The demographics of Calgary are extremely influenced by the fact that this Indian importation is very much tied to economic activity, workforce, truckers. The Indians, they end up truckers a lot because... And the truckers, of course, that depends on the economic activity, and there's a big flow of economic activity coming from Alberta being a successful oil province. It's very complex. The sets of... It's not just the idea, oh, do migrants like to go to Toronto or Vancouver? Yes, they do. But they also get drained from other mechanisms. They get drained into wherever work. Wherever there is a workforce needed and the local employers don't care about the demographics of that workforce. Rockin' Robin Hood says, JF, I was touched by your show on Mama JF. I too went through the same thing a few decades ago. I was in and out of the drug places and those close to me tried to get me out. I'm okay now and I've led an AC. Okay, I don't know what an AC is, but... I'm glad that you enjoyed the show. I don't know what to say. I mean, there's a... there's always these people... I dropped my pen here. There's these people on Twitter convinced that I killed Mama JF. It's funny to me. Across the years, given that this had happened to me, I felt that I had a right, you know, because when you have to endure some suffering that is undeserved, I felt that I had a claim. I had a right to engage in a public comedic act that has never been tried before. It's never happened that a guy is suspected of murder, but he knows he's not the murderer. He knows he's not engaged in any way in her disappearance. And he goes out there and plays the act that people want him to be so much. People want me so much to be a murderer that I'm going out there on Dick Masterson. I'm like, yes, I have dropped Mama JF on ground that was solid at the time. So I say these things and I don't regret any of it. I'm happy that I demonstrated the amount of retardation out there. There is basically a bunch of clueless people who parasitize this world. Normies. But they're worse than just the normies. They're really particularly stupid, and they will tell you that you don't understand emotions, but it's the contrary. It's these people who don't understand comedy and don't understand my type of comedy. So my public performance about Mama JF has been to seize an opportunity, because it's a negative thing that happens in your life when your spouse disappears. And so I thought, well, how do I turn it into something a little bit positive? Well, I could do some humor around it. Sense of Progress says no audio. I would be very surprised if I've been talking for 9 minutes and the entire chat... The entire chat has forgot to inform me that they weren't hearing me. There's most likely audio coming out, okay? John Drake says there is. Okay, yeah, because doesn't make sense. Someone would have warned me before, hopefully. Marby Dog says refresh to get live video. John Drake says Indians dominate service and trucking in Canada, and they do hire their own. Yeah, I mean, it's a dark future what's happening, because what is going to be the way for a young white man to escalate the employment sector? It's like whites have withdrawn with their boomer houses, and they have focused on the value of their boomer houses, and they wrecked the entire demographics and economy of the country just to import enough people to desire their house so that their house is valued. But what you're creating here is a kind of aristocracy, an aristocracy of real estate, where basically there's going to be two types of white men, like, rising into an adult right at this time or in the next 20 years. You're going to have the one who inherits a significant amount of wealth, and then he can continue the aristocratic game of his boomer parents. But then there's going to be a bunch of other people who come from numerous families, so they have to split the inheritance, or people who come from a family who doesn't have property or assets to pass on, doesn't have Bitcoin. And these people are going to be stuck in a super hostile, brown-controlled employment market. It's going to be worse than woman-controlled, let me tell you. Woman is fucking annoying, but Indian-controlled HR, are you ready for it? I'm not. I'm already like, fuck the employment sector when it was just starting to be controlled by women. When it's controlled by Indians, it's like, no, we're not even speaking to each other. I refuse to engage. Give me welfare. Give me whatever. John Drake says, Bitcoin's gonna destroy the real estate. That's the ironic part. Yes, the ultimate, the end goal and the end game is that down the line, the aristocratic game of, oh, you have a class of white people, white boomer descendants, who are carrying their real estate value into the future. And we import these migrants who have to work to, and they have to basically bias the system toward employing themselves to make a living. That system will crash. And it will crash for many reasons. First, the immigrants, no matter what kind of disadvantage you start them with, they make babies. They make babies until they control the world. That is why India is filled with Indians. And that is why Canada will be filled with Indians at one point. Now, the aristocratic passation of real estate, if it's not handled a la South Africa, we're just going to murder you until you give us your house. And if you don't give us your house then, or we don't succeed at murdering you, then we're going to expropriate you from the state itself. If it doesn't go that way, it will go any of the other ways through which, with loose democratic values, the Indians will somehow shape the system so that the aristocratic white class cannot sustain this whole trade that the boomer did, basically, of asset value of his real estate versus demographic maintenance of his country, is a short-term reward that will last less than 60 years. In 60 years down the line, your houses are worth nothing. They've been bought out by Indians who have paid themselves salary through a biased employment market, and you lose everything. Now you're a minority white population in a high crime, high corruption country with no house, and now you're white trash. You're worse than white trash. White trash is fine in a white country. White trash is pretty good in a white country, let me tell you. Okay, you live in a parking spot in an RV or whatever, in a little tent, trailer park home. All right, but if you do that in a white nation, it's not so bad. Wait until you have to do that in an Indian-controlled nation with fictitious zombie economy controlled by the Indian for the Indian. It's not looking good, guys. Marby Dog says, white states like West Virginia, Wyoming, Montana, Ohio, and Idaho need to attract white migration through reduction of social services. Absolutely. We have to start splitting up these countries, Canada and the U.S., in a way that truly distinguishes and purifies the white population. And the only way to do this is create an aristocratic, meritocratic-based economy that is essentially, although, you know, doesn't have to be clear, doesn't have to be explicit, but effectively displeasant for migrants, uninteresting for migrants. Now, there's many things you can do for this. Apparently, you can just play classical music on the street, and it solves the homeless problem. There's many things you can do to just not be welcoming. But just ban abortion. Just start with this. Ban abortion. You've gotten rid of a bunch of mentally unhealthy women who are on psychiatric pills and who are liberals. And you've already, their xenophilia is already out of your society because they consider you backward, so they don't want to live there. Just banning abortion is a good start. It actually, down the line, because the females that come then are different and on average they're less liberal, just this will have an effect on your demographics. Marby Dog says, JF is not a killer, truth teller. Yes. JMC says, I'm curious, did you obtain residency in Alberta through the Alberta Advantage Immigration Program? No, I am a mere Canadian citizen. So I merely just entered Alberta. No bells or whistles. I just entered Alberta because I can. that is how it works when you are a Canadian citizen. It's interesting that you ask if I needed any program. No. Canadian citizens can just decide which province they live in, and this jurisdictional switching is the last line of defense for white people, let me tell you. Because when they started politically persecuting me on PEI and then in Quebec, I knew where to run. And it was Alberta, and it's the last place to run in Canada. There are similar states in the US, but in Canada, it's the last place. Silent God says, who the fuck are boomers going to sell their $2 million McMansion to? Exactly. That is the issue. The issue is that down the line, even if you've created a fictive flow of human beings to desire your house, the fictive flow of human being is worth what it's worth. And in the end, if you can't sell it to an Indian trucker, you can't sell it to anyone. And so in the end, down the line, your house, no matter what is the number that will be attached to its sale value, it will be worth the value of an Indian driving 10 hours a day. That's what it will be worth. It might be $2 million in an inflationary universe. It might be $10,000 in a deflationary universe. But it's going to be worth the Indian's everyday work. Because that's what we have. So it's a very important thing, this, that I just said. It boils down to you can't parasitize your way out of the fact that ultimately you are replaceable economically. You are replaceable. And so as an economic unit, you are worth nothing. You are worth nothing more than the Indian. And therefore, you have to have a conception of yourself that is greater than this. that is greater than the economic box. And therefore, we must talk of a society, of our society, and of our desire for the direction of our civilization outside of the economic technocratic box analysis. It has to be about culture, genes. It has to be about inheritance, greater inheritance than the money, but the ensemble of the inheritance that we give as a society. And the fact that some people are unfit to carry that inheritance. Quebecois culture is going to take a huge hit. I see the day coming in my lifetime where I will have a record of Quebecois culture, like Pierre Falardeau, Pierre Perrault, early cinematographers, early literary work, not even early, but even more recent literary work from Quebecois people. And there will be a time that Quebec will be covered in people that don't even know about these things. They don't know who Pierre Falardeau is. They don't know who Elvis Gratton is. But I'll know. But I'm outside of Quebec because I've been chased by these fucking crazies. It's a sad thing. It's a sad thing to be in at war, basically, because we follow the Iran-Israel war, but there is a demographic war happening around us, and it's much graver, if you want my advice. If you want my opinion, compared to explosions and little missiles. The missile can just kill a limited number of people, but what's been happening at the demographic war level, the development of gangs, of employment, and the development of cartels, immigrant cartels and voting cartels, that is disgusting. Because that is the true fall of everything that we defined as our civilization from beforehand. Deconstruct says, my part of the city has turned from 15% to 95% Indian since COVID. That is something which is peculiar to England. The Boris punishment migration era where he made trade deals with India. Absolutely ridiculous. Greatest Whitest says, we have total freedom of movement in Canada. In principle, yes, in principle. Now, let me tell you, they will come at you in various ways for for just changing province. Or, I mean, the whole escapade where I had to be off the internet for 2-3 months and I had to drive from PEI to Alberta to flee local persecution by state level, province level, corrupt agents. The whole thing was started by the fact that I had things on my lawn for 24 hours. I was awaiting a trash truck to throw out these things, and they went after me and after my family. Oh, you have trash on your yard. Let us investigate your family and let us see if you're a good parent. They will come at you for moving, basically. They will find any reason to punish you because you've done the wrong thing. The choosing is the wrong thing from the, oh yeah, Offenbach, Magister Templi. Offenbach. Je sais, faudrait bien que je sorte. Oui, mais mes blues passent plus d'importe. Who will be able to sing this in 50 years from now on the whole territory of Quebec? I don't know. But it's a very powerful song. Sendan Ariel sends $4. Rushdieism is going to do an alliance with Grok, seize the ring of power, build a cream model, then a fertility clinic, and then colonize Mars after putting Elon Musk. Oh, yeah. I had this whole discussion with Yann today, and it's on YouTube. You can go check it in French. And Yann, of course, was very intelligent about the theory of phenotypic revolution and understood all of it. But he had a point where he lost control. He became like this Galadriel or whatever. The elf queen in Lord of the Rings, where she turns blue and she's like, "People will have a dark queen!" And he became like this. He wanted to be the revolutionary phenotype. He wanted to start the genetic modification. And I was like, whoa, calm down, Yann. Triple says, "Jeff, do you know any good counter argument to legalizing incest?" Well, there are definitely good arguments against incest. So first, are we talking about pedo incest? Because there's the obvious problem that if you legalize incest, there are some abusive parents who will have sex with their children. So that's a first argument. Non-consensual rape, pedo sex is bad, and it's also bad when it's incest. The second argument, of course, is you have a higher chance of producing genetically handicapped, with genetically recessive traits, children. So you are bringing into the world a higher rate of dysfunctionality. Now, that's not a deontological argument. It's more like a utilitarian consequentialist argument. Because you could ask and you could say it begs the question, why don't we want more handicapped people? But the answer can be because it sucks. And so if you have two ancestral relationships involving a man and a female and a male and a female, you can take the male here and have him reproduce with her here. Take the male here. So you can go from two handicapped babies to zero. And in fact, if you rotate properly, you can have the exact same amount of babies or more, and they'll be healthy. So unless you want to believe that that the entire definition of a handicap is normocentric and is arbitrary, and you don't attribute value to general medical wellness, then yes, there is a good argument against incest, of course. Deconstruct says, "Pakistan won the skirmish with India, and I'm not going to let my colleague forget it." I haven't followed to that extent, let me tell you. Are you talking about the skirmish like a year, a week ago, 2 weeks ago? Or are you talking more far in the past? Neymar fan says, "Jeff, why don't you say the N-word? Do you think it's uncivilized?" Well, I have said the N-word, you know, because in the Shiloh Hendricks video, there's a guy, the guy who's trying to shame her. He says, "Did you just use the nigger word? Did you just say the nigger word to this child here?" And I'm like, bro, the nigger word is nigger. So yes, I have used that word. Now, it's not I use it in those situations where it's comedic. And it's not like I'm not expressing something with it other than laughing at the situation. That we have invented a censorship word called the N-word. But that this guy See, it's very important, the psychology of what's happening in the Shiloh Hendrix attack. Because what is the ontology of the N-word? Okay, so you have a word. Now, N-word. You have a word to point to the word because you shouldn't say that word. So that's the first layer, censorship interpretation of N-word. N-word exists so that people can talk about the word without saying it. And by the way, you know, this is... I mean, you just threw me on a 30 minutes philosophic streak. I'm not going to stop. This is important. By the way, this is the contrary of self-reference. So for the fans of embedded systems out there and fractals, and I know Jan is getting excited. I'm sure he's getting excited. What does the N-word does? It subtract from language a self-referential aspect of language. Because there's the problem of language that to talk of a word, you need to say the word. See, it's a little bit like if I bring up elephants, there's no way for me to bring up the massive piece of meat and legs and trunk that an elephant is without using the word elephant. And in fact, in talking about the concept, merely taking the word elephant comes with the assumption that, okay, the elephant has a trunk, the elephant is an animal, the elephant is this. And that's a self-referential aspect of language where the meta concept of the elephant, the idea of the elephant, and the word of the elephant are stuck in a self-referential loop. So there's a bunch of things I just can't bring up without using the word elephant. And there's a bunch of things that are necessarily brought up by when I use the word elephant. Now, the invention of the N-word is a meta-signaling layer of language in which, hey, I'm stuck with the problem. I'm a leftist. I'm woke. I'm a xenophilic toward the black people. I really want to use the N-word a lot. I really want to use the primary word, but and I have a lot of things to say about it. But at the same time, I need to dissociate myself from the self-referential problem of language, which is that every time I bring the word, I will bring what I perceive to be a baggage of it, what I perceive to be a self-referential property of it, such that I will be accused of being a speaker of it. So there you go, the invention of the N-word, a word to, and you know, Steven Pinker has said amazing things about this in some conferences and speeches. But a word about another word, just because you can't name the original word without invoking its self-referential baggage. But what happened in Shiloh Hendrix is a third-level meta-embedment of the N-word. And I want you to understand why it happened. Because never in the history of humanity, probably, this happened. A third-level embedded system of self-referential censorship. One of the most beautiful thing I've seen, and one of the reasons why, you know, Shiloh Hendrix, I think, was an important moment from the GoFundMe, the cultural victory, the black fatigue aspect, but also from a purely mathematical perspective, Shiloh Hendrix, to me, was an important civilizational event. Because there was an instance of a third layer embedment of a self-referential censorship loop. Okay, and it goes that way. So you have the word nigger, a word, an unspeakable word of slavery and control and white possession and dispossession of blacks. Okay, we have the word. You have then the N-word. A family-friendly, if you will, option to dissociate from the original term, to be able to speak about it without naming it. But then you have the guy filming, Shiloh Hendricks, who's filming her. And why can't he say, did you just use the N-word? Why isn't this guy saying, he doesn't say this. He doesn't say, did you just use the N-word? He says, did you just use the nigger word? It's because now the censor word is not strong enough to induce this moral outrage. So we've gone full circle here. The original word has too much moral outrage. A word is designed so that you can point to it without the moral outrage. But this guy is trying to film a white woman and shame her and cancel her. So here you have cancel culture coming and saying the N-word isn't strong enough. Because I want people to be alerted. I want people to be shocked. I want to recover the moral outrage of the initial term. But I still want to show my willingness to engage in the etiquette of human speech. And there you go. There you had the creation of this Frankensteinish experiment of language. The nigger word. Which is what he said. Anyways, I'm tired today. I've been rambling. I'm super tired today. I don't have much to say. I will tell you, today I woke up early and I did some slicing of... I've been securing my internet connection. The Ryobi 40-volt, 10-foot pole, cordless, battery-powered saw is a very good tool. I like it. It's like a chainsaw, but it's a little smaller than a chainsaw. And it allows cutting high branches. So I cut all of the high branches that were threatening my fiber optics cable, my electricity cable. So it's gone. And now I need to treat the wood. I sliced it down in little logs and little pieces of wood that maybe can be used by someone who has a wood stove. A very good tool. I've been buying a couple of Ryobi tool, the hedge trimmer, 18-volt battery. I like the fact that you can have a single battery and buy the tools separately. And there's two batteries, though. There's the 40-volt battery and the 18-volt battery. But once you have the two, you can use all Ryobi tools with it. It's really fun. The hedge trimmer, the grass trimmer. Rodilacid says, JF, what happened to your other chainsaw? I remember you reviewed your other saw and said it was great. I think it was a Husky brand. What happened to it and why did you have to bury it? Oh, I didn't bury it. The chainsaw, I decided to leave it with the house. I decided that whoever was going to buy the house would benefit from this high quality 455 Rancher. So, yeah. Whoever bought the house, it's theirs now. Frog Eyes says, JF, you bought a Dodge Grand Caravan. Was it new or used? Did you cross-shop other vehicles / brands? It's used. It had about 100,000 kilometers. 100,000 kilometers of use, so whatever that is in mileage, I don't know. Because my situation is relatively uncertain because of the fact that my girlfriend is away from me. You know, who will move where and when. So I couldn't buy a new car right now because it would be stupid for me to do so. I wanted a used car because I want to be sure that, you know, if things necessitate, I can just put a brick on the accelerator and let it fly into the lake and disappear forever. Basically, if I had a new car, the problem is, what if I have to immigrate to some other country at some point? What if I have to fly by plane and not by car? And what if I have to abandon this car, basically, or sell it in a fire sale? And so for this reason, I have decided to get a used car because it's the perfect moment for a used car.
I've heard in the past Makita brand was better, but now I also use Ryobi. DeWalt is supposedly the high end, but Ryobi tools have been fine for me.
Yeah, I love the low price aspect of Ryobi. By the way, this long pole saw will cost you less than a chainsaw. It cost me $150, and the equivalent chainsaw with battery and all was something like $400. So I get basically what a chainsaw would do. Now, the only thing is this is slightly smaller than a chainsaw, so it's not ideal if you need to cut a big tree, a big tree trunk from the base of the trunk. But it's almost never what you have to do. Most of the time, it's medium-sized branches, and this is perfect for medium size. But I've been very satisfied by the low price of Ryobi. And yes, I've tried these higher-end tools at times, and I don't know what's the difference. They do seem more robust, more solid, sometimes more heavy. But hey, I like my little plastic Ryobi stuff. Of course, it's nothing compared to the 455 Rancher. But the 455 Rancher becomes annoying also with time, because it's heavy, it's painful to use. In most situations, the little plastic Ryobi will just get you exactly where you want, and at a lower price point, at a much lighter carrying effort. So it's really good. Blimpy says, if a tree falls in front of your used car before, you can shove it in the lake and all you have is this tool. Okay, people are now discussing the mechanics of getting rid of a car. No, of course I wouldn't. People were telling me, Jeff, that is pollution. Of course, I won't put a brake on my accelerator to get rid of my car. And in fact, as part of this shopping experience that I had with the Dodge, I've now realized that, oh my God, trade-in value is something. Like, honestly, I didn't say it to the car salesman, okay? But I started the day thinking that I would be willing to give away my current car for $1,000. Okay? And so you were asking me, did you shop at different places? So I drove at a place they had an inventory on the internet, and it said that they had a Dodge Caravan, but they didn't have it. They had sold it. But then I'm like, hey, no commitment from you. And anyways, I'm not buying from you today because you don't have the Dodge Caravan. But how much do you think I can get for this car? And I was willing to get rid of it for $1,000. And this guy tells me, oh, well, I need to do inspection and stuff. But you're probably going to get anything from $6,000 to $10,000. I was like, what? Basically, the car I want to buy is almost the same price as the car I have. All I need is a bigger caravan-style 7-seater because I have bigger and bigger responsibilities and families. So I'm like, what? $6,000 to $10,000 worth? And so now I had this information. So now I go. This is why you have to travel. You have to drive to this place and get the feel of the different places, seek your information, do research. So now I had done my research. I knew that I had something valuable. So I go to the other car salesman and I'm like, I'd like to buy this caravan. And I didn't show my hand. My hand was, I would have been ready this morning to pay.
The Dodge Caravan shifter is strange and in a stupid position. I've said my piece.
I actually love it. I love this. I love PRD just in front of you like it's a computer and you're just typing on it. I love it personally, Nate Doug, but thank you so much for the generous donation. So continuing my story, I didn't show my hand at all to the guy. The reality is the guy had the exact caravan with the exact mileage I wanted at the exact price I wanted. And I had started the morning thinking my car may be worth $1,000, I don't know. But instead, I just split the guy to the maximum. Just because, first, it's good to make savings. Like, you don't want to pay too much for something. But it was almost like a male... it was a test of my masculinity here. Because normally I hate to deal, I hate to negotiate, I hate to pull down the price. But I was like, no, now you are a man. The family relies on you. If you lose $5,000 today, that's $5,000 that's not in your inheritance, that doesn't get passed into Bitcoin or whatever. And so I'm like at the car salesman and I'm like, bro, your price point is a little high. It's above the initial budget I had thought about, and the price of your caravan as such may make the transaction impossible. There is one thing that could bring us solace and unison here. Perhaps you can give me an excellent trade-in value for what I have, which in my view is worth at least $10,000. And then I would be able to afford the transaction. I'm sorry, those are the limits. I'm dealing with the fact that I have to do this operation in cash. I have a limited budget. I have my children with me. They have needs. I'm sorry, but it's that tight. Can you go and get the best trade-in value you possibly can? And so he goes to see his trade-in evaluator. His job basically being evaluate my current car. And find what value they're willing to pay for my car before I buy their car in exchange too. And the guy is looking at my car and he's doing all his examination. And then he's looking at his papers and he's scratching his head. And he comes to me and he says, now, I'm trying to do my best to get to 10,000 here. But do you realize that this other guy could have been bullshitting you when he said 10,000? And I was like, I understand. I understand that his 10,000 evaluation was merely monopoly money because he didn't have a van to offer to me. It was absolute fiction. What I'd like to hear from you is, can you get close to 10,000? And the guy comes back with an offer where it was $8,000. So I went in my head this morning from, my car is worth $1,000. I might even be willing to give it away if they can rid me of this problem. To, okay, I'll accept $8,000 reluctantly. I had no idea cars were worth that much. Now, it was a relatively new car. It's a car that I had bought new. But I had bought it with Mama JF, you know, and It had issues. There was a bumper issue on it. It had noise. It had a lot of fixes to be done. And to me, it was, I had to get rid of it because it was registered in Mama JF's name. And although I have many legal rights to do many legal things with Mama JF's property, these plate DMVs, they're a bunch of bureaucrats who don't understand common law. And so I tried. So I had no mechanism to make this car my legitimate car, but it was very easy for me to sell it and to buy another car instead. Fractalit says used car are a hot thing these days. Yeah, I discovered a whole market. It's a market that you do have to understand it if you want to engage with it. But there is a lot of viability out there. And these days, they are selling the used car more and more into the actual spread of price. Like, I used to think that a car loses 50% of its value if you just drive it 100 kilometers. But these days, they will have the car new at 22,000. And then a few kilometers, they'll sell it at 21,000. And then 2 years of use, they'll sell it at 15,000. They have the whole spread. It's interesting. I guess what causes this partly is the whole renting industry, where they're renting these cars and they're like, oh, I'm going to rent this car for a year. And then they rent some other car, and then they shift. And so you end up with all sorts of cars in the spread. All right, guys, I'm tired. I'm going to sleep. I need rest because, but hopefully I get very soon back to full energy. But these days I've been waking up and it's like log chopping, freeing of the edge trimming so that the bushes don't grow into my optics cable. I'm doing things that are useful for the preservance of the show, the preservance of my life long term. Marby Dog says, never rent or lease. Yeah, I'm not into this. I'm into owning the car. And to me, a car is a little bit like a marriage. It's, I commit, I literally emotionally commit to the car. Because when I was dealing about the prices, the prices of
you're in Alberta now. You should only be looking at either an F-150 or a Dodge Ram.
I would love to be part of the club. I would love to be part of the masculine club of these oil drillers driving around Alberta. But pickup trucks are fundamentally wrong to me. They don't have the transportation capacity of a human, of seven human beings, seven seats. So you pay all sorts of gas expenses. You have huge gas mileage ratio. But then what does it serve you? You can't transport seven children in it. That is it for tonight, boys. Much love. I'll see you all tomorrow.